Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with 7 cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're tuned in to KTOO's Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests today are Dan Monti. Dan will be giving a lecture this Friday as part of SHI's lecture series on culturally responsive education. Hi, Dr. Monti.
Good afternoon.
Also on the call is Christy Dillingham, and she will be sharing some of the details about that lecture series. Thanks for being with us today, Christy. Hello.
Hi, Shelley. Thank you.
Of course. Of course. I'll have you both just introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit about what you do. Dr. Monti, would you like to go first?
Sure. So I'm Dan Monti, and I teach at the University of Alaska Southeast. I've been there for about 20 years now, full time. I teach anthropology and some other classes in the social sciences.
Thanks. And Christy, how about yourself?
Sure. I am the education director for Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
All right. And Christy, can I ask you a follow-up question? I was wondering if you would say a little bit more about the lecture series that Dan is going to be a part of this Friday.
You bet. Just this past the beginning of August, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute offered a culturally responsive education conference. And from that conference, it was a virtual conference, and we had educators, community members, politicians from all over Alaska, as well as all over the lower 48, participants joined us. And it was on culturally responsive education. What does it look like? What does it sound like in our classrooms? How do we start as a collective, start really examining all the educational inequities and systems of oppression that are present in our educational system today? So there's a team of us that said, you know, we're really having these discussions here amongst educators, and we really need to bring it out to our community. And we need to start sharing this information with our community so that they can be part of the discussion as well. And so ultimately, the goal of this education lecture series is to unveil those educational inequities and social injustices that have been long part of the educational system here in Alaska. And, you know, we sought out specific presenters who could speak on topics to help our community expand their understanding about the legacy of colonization and the impacts of education it has on Tlingit culture and history. And so Dan is one of those individuals who we really felt like what he has to offer is really important for our community to know as it relates to education.
Thank you for giving us that context and that framework. And I agree. It sounds like Dan's lecture is going to fit right in. This Friday, the title of it is History and Healing, A Story of Douglas. And based on the description, it's going to address systemic racism, which has inflicted historical trauma upon Alaska Natives. And specifically, you want to discuss how a village was destroyed when Sa'ik Gastineau Elementary was constructed. I have a lot of questions, but my first one is just, Dan, in your experience, how widely known is this, the history of what happened when this school was built? Is that something that people are taught in schools when they grow up here? Is it a pretty widely known story?
I found that in general, no, it isn't. You can talk to a lot of old timers who grew up in the Douglas area, and they knew that there was a cemetery and graves in the location where Gastineau Elementary, now we want to call it Sa'ik Elementary School or Community School. And I found most folks didn't really know about it unless they had lived in Douglas during the time. And it's something that wasn't taught in classrooms at all. And it's really when I became involved with the story in 2012 that I learned more about it. I had heard different things about this story. And as I researched it more, then I started bringing it into the classroom on the college level and became a very interesting story.
What are some of the reasons that you focused your lecture on this tragedy?
Yeah, and it's really a two-part thing, and in the summary it kind of sounded like it brought both events together. But originally I got involved with this story when City and Borough of Juneau and the Douglas Indian Association in June of 2012, there was renovation work being done in the front of Gastineau Elementary. And as they were doing that work, many folks in the community may remember hearing on K2, good old K2, and in the newspaper, stories about how a few human graves were unearthed. And fortunately, the construction workers were very respectful, very responsible, and they stopped construction. And then the big community dialogue began. And this was a really tough one for many different Native organizations. I think a tough one for city and borough officials, school district people. And the question was, how could an elementary school be constructed over, a Native cemetery, or at least graves, or both? And I was actually working for a culture camp with Gold Belt Heritage Foundation as those graves were unearthed. And we took young people there, and the elders were very good. They kind of talked the students through it. And of course, it brings up a range of emotions that a school could be built over somebody's ancestors. And at that point, studies were being done, and they were learning more, and they were even doing ground penetrating research to see the extent of maybe the cemetery there. And later that summer, after they had kind of an on-site healing ceremony there, that's when the city borough of Juneau, at the request of Gold Belt Heritage and Douglas Indian Association, I kind of became involved. And Rob Steedle said, we kind of want you to find the smoking gun. And how could this happen? And the smoking gun was not some mysterious, unknown name or something like that. It's a phrase that is unfortunately very much alive and prevalent right now in our community and national discussion, and the answer is systemic racism, institutional racism. The city of Douglas at the time, of course, which has become part of CBJ, they were the ones that made that decision. And on some of the folks who informally talked to me said, well, it was kind of the one area that hadn't been developed that was the cheapest place to build. But the school was built. They started a lot of the work, the administrative work in 1954. And of course, construction was finished on Sayaic Elementary about 1958 or so. And then a few years later is the story that now folks have heard about a little bit more, where the city of Douglas actually condemned and burnt down several structures right there from where the Mayflower School, where they have a Montessori school right now. That property, I believe, is in the ownership of CBJ, right down to where the hockey rink is today. That side hill along 3rd Street or St. Anne's, there were in the 50s and up to about 1962, there were about 20 Native homes, net lofts. There was kind of a community hall, Quonset hut of sorts. and different structures. And over the course of time, from when the school was built over the cemetery, the city of Douglas continued to condemn, bulldoze, and burn many of those structures. And of course, in the last few years, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation was able to receive some funding and has put up two healing poles. So it's a story of resilience today also, where Gold Belt Heritage and other different cooperation of other different Native entities here in the community work together in partnership, and local carvers and Master Carver Nathan Jackson, who's a friend and from Ketchikan, of course, these days, helped work on the two healing poles. The first healing pole was, of course, put up in front of Sayaik Elementary, and the second one then was put up down there along the ball fields today, right in front of the Sandy Beach Recreational Picnic Shelters. And so this is kind of the contemporary story, the story of the 50s and 60s of institutional racism, the story behind the poles. The poles, of course, have Kutia and Tlingit have a lot more history and meaning, and talk of the clans and Kwan's ownership of those areas and their stories and their relationship to that area. But those, both of those poles were put up by those Native organizations to really move towards healing. And so that's a new part of the story. For me as an educator, my connection to the story is really being an educator and wanting our community, helping raise kids in Juneau, young people, for the past 20 years or so, and wanting them to grow up healthy and happy, and figuring out a way to tell this story. You know, I put in my foreword to a report years ago. I said, I don't bring up this history, and I really call it a story because I don't want to come across as an expert, just an educator and community member. But I talk about this story not to reopen old wounds or inflict new ones, but to acknowledge the injustice that was done, and help us to start a dialogue and figure out a way of coming together, you know, as a community, and healing those wounds and thinking about what do we do for reparations. Think about, as a community, how do we talk about these things? Rather than, in the words of one of my old professors at the University of Chicago, who called them non-events. And he was talking about even things like the Cherokee Trail of Tears, where they become so traumatic. Some folks on all sides don't want to talk about it, you know, years later. Whether you're Native, non-Native, didn't even live in the community, it's such a painful history that there can be events where we just don't talk about them anymore, you know. And so mine's really kind of a discussion with the community and the educators. How can we move forward, talk about it, acknowledge it, not, you know, have a blind eye towards it, and then move ahead, you know, so we can all be stronger as a community.
Well, thank you for that information, Dan. It sounds like it's going to be a really informative lecture. As you're talking, I know I have a lot of questions popping into my mind, more than what we have time to discuss or go into here, but that is what Friday's lecture is for. I understand it's at noon, and it'll be streamed on SHI's YouTube channel, and it'll be interactive where people can submit questions, and then the staff will read them, and I think you'll have a chance to answer them. And Christy, do you want to say more about how folks can participate with the lecture?
Yes, Shelley, thank you. So individuals would log into Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's YouTube channel, and they'll see the live stream happening right there, right up front. And there's a box off to the right where they can type their questions, they can make comments, and we will be asking Dan those questions live. And so we really want to encourage you to come out to participate, I should say, tune in and participate. And if you can't tune in at the time of the live lecture, please go back to the YouTube channel and look at it later, share it with others. And we really hope to increase and support community dialogue.
Well, I commend the efforts of SHI for bringing this lecture series to the public and for making it so widely available and accessible and so informative. So thank you very much, Christy, for your role in that. And thank you so much, Dan, for being one of the speakers in the lecture series. And thank you both today for being here on the show. And I'm glad we could help you get the word out about this.
Thank you, Shelley.
Finish cheese. So you question team. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Goodbye.